Angie's List is now Angie, the nation's largest home services marketplace. And Angie is here to help homeowners get all their jobs done well. Angie has helped over 150 million homeowners care for their homes. Whatever your home project, big or small, indoor or outdoor, come to Angie to connect with and hire skilled professionals to get the job done well. My son needed a major yard cleanup at his new home. We went straight to the Angie website and found a bunch of local, reliable, and affordable pros to handle the job, and one did pronto. Angie can help you find the best price for your project. Angie lets you request and compare quotes from multiple pros in just a few taps, or book services at an upfront price based on local data. Angie has cost guides that tell you what others have paid for similar projects, both nationally and in your area. Get started at Angie.com. That's ANGI.com, or download the app today. The app and website are free to use.
Hello, ladies. Hello, gentlemen. This is the Victor Davis Hanson Show. I'm Jack Fowler, the host, the star, the namesake, Victor Davis Hanson. It is Davis, isn't it? I did introduce you once as Victor Hanson.
Everybody says David.
It was with Sarah Palin. It was so humiliating. I was looking at you, and as the words came out of my mouth, I was like,
I know what happens. Don't worry about it. I either get two reactions. They'd say, David, why would anybody have a name like Davis? Or why do you have three names? And I try to say my poor mother insisted on it.
Well, she had every right. She had naming rights.
Yes,
right?
She did. She didn't get to. My father named all of us after Scandinavian family members, and she didn't have any choice. So she insisted on a middle name that was her father's, you know, last name.
Is your twin brother also Davis in the middle?
Yes, he is. Yeah.
Oh, coolio. Okay. Well, anyway, Martin and Ely Anderson, senior fellow at the Hoover Institution, Wayne and Marsha Buskey, distinguished fellow in history at Hillsdale College. We are recording on Saturday, November 5th, and this podcast will be broadcast through Just the News, our mothership website. John Solomon runs it. It's our happy home. This will be broadcast after Election Day, most likely up on November 10th. We'll have a little politics. We're going to talk about Mitch McConnell and Donald Trump, the ongoing agita between the two. We're going to talk about Brazil's elections and some exclusive pieces Victor has written for his website, victorhanson.com. And let's get going with McConnell Trump right after these important messages.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We're back with the Victor Davis Hanson Show. So, Victor, we've talked before about the ongoing aggravation, kind of name calling, one way mostly Donald Trump against Mitch McConnell. And something interesting has been reported where my old stomping grounds, National Review, Michael Strain from AEI, did an interesting piece about the recent elections. Well, the elections will have been recent as this podcast is being aired, but So there's a lot going on here, but okay, there were some Trump candidates for Senate seats who McConnell really didn't like because they weren't worthy enough, whatever the hell, not qualified enough, but they won the nominations and McConnell wasn't going to support them and they were lagging in the polls, etc. And they were Trump, they were Trump's candidates. So that's kind of the rough background. And then according to this piece Michael Strain wrote in National Review, and I'm sure it's been reported elsewhere in various ways, McConnell's PAC or whatever means of campaign contributions he has at his hands really poured money into these particular races, New Hampshire,
yes,
Ohio, et cetera. And the comparison is that Donald Trump, who's sitting on a motherload of money, has spent very little money supporting these particular candidates, who, by the way, the day we're talking, you know, when this is being aired, they may be the presumptive senators from these various states. So meanwhile, once again, Donald Trump attacked Mitch McConnell. You know, what do the Democrats have on him that he's I just can't get to the bottom.
Yeah, it was kind of a, you know, the debt ceiling. I think he attacked him on.
Okay. Well, I don't, you know, there's something to be said here from maybe McConnell really did help these election outcomes. I'm making a big assumption that they will be the outcomes. I don't know how this is good for the ongoing feud here, is good for the things, conservative principles, the things we care about. But Victor, we've talked about it before, but I just wanted to see if there was anything more you wanted to say about the health or the wellness of this, these two men and their relationship.
Yeah, I think in a perfect world, they would just sort of agree to disagree and let each of them work in different ways for the common conservative good. And everybody knows Mitch McConnell was instrumental in getting a lot of judges approved and green-lighted right through the Congress. So he deserves a lot of credit for that. And Donald Trump blamed him, of course, when he failed to pass a reform for Obamacare. He blamed him for the McCain vote. I think they fought, didn't they fight over Lisa Murkowski, that she was the incumbent rhino, and this
right.
Kelly Shabaka is a very good candidate, and she's a real conservative.
She is.
And she's ahead, and it didn't make any sense in the Trump view why you would back somebody who votes with the Democrats and does stupid things like votes against Brett Kavanaugh's confirmation.
So, or I think she may have voted for impeachment.
Yeah, she did. You're right. Yeah. She did. And so why would you want her there? And I guess Mitch McConnell's attitude is, we're just going to back the incumbent no matter what they do, because we don't want to get into personalities. But so he's given a lot of money. And on those races that I think he did give money to Vance. He gave money to four or five, ranging from what, 5 to 2 million? But he didn't give any money to Blake Masters, because he is tied at the hip with Trump. So I suppose the idea is that he feels that he's the senior elder statesman of legislative Republicans with the most power. He does. He's the only one that has, you know, that he's had that mastery of the Senate protocol. He understands it better than any of the Democrats. So he knows how to take bills and wind them through that labyrinth, and that's valuable. But when he doesn't understand what's happening beneath his feet, and that is that this party is changing. So when he makes statements, as he did earlier, I think in September, that he didn't have confidence necessarily they were going to take the Senate, and he had some valid reasons. He said there were more Republicans vulnerable than there were Democrats. True. But then he said that, you know, on the Senate level, it matters about the candidate. And then he raised his eyebrows and he sort of mumbled that these candidates might, you know, the Trump candidates. And you don't do that when you're the head of the Senate for your party. You say the opposite. You say, we got great candidates.
Right.
The Democrats have the bad candidates, not us. Right. John mm-hmm. Fetterman is a bad candidate. And Hobbs or whatever her name is, and that's running
North Carolina.
Yeah. I mean, she's a bad candidate, and Kelly is a pathetic candidate, and Patty Murray is blowing a big lead, and she's a bad, Maggie Hassan is a bad candidate. In comparison, there's a whole new generation of really, I mean, think about it for a minute. Mm-hmm. There's this Tiffany Smiley in Oregon. Is it Oregon?
Washington State.
Washington, excuse me. And then you help me there with Deseg. She's running in Oregon. She's wonderful.
Oh, yeah.
And then there's Carrie Lake. And one of my favorites is Tudor Dixon. And in Michigan, and when you look at all of those candidates, they're all self-assertive, they're independent, they've had lives apart from government, they're very, very conservative, mm-hmm. they're well-spoken, they're very attractive. They're just ideal candidates, and when you compare them with whom they're running against, the people they're running against either won't debate them or can't debate them, and they're not very impressive. So when you look at that, you would think that Mitch McConnell would say, wow.
Right.
Where did a Carrie Lake come from? Wow. Where did Smiley come from? Where did Dixon come from? These are great candidates, and we've got to get out and get them elected. And he didn't do that. So
maybe not making an excuse from there was a, you know, you could be snake bit on this. That happened in Nevada, whenever it was, like 2010, where gosh, she was a terrible candidate, nice lady, but she lost to Harry Reid in a race that would have been won by the woman she beat in the primary. And then you had that Delaware crazy lady.
The witch woman.
Yeah, the witch woman. So those things made
I actually had met her.
An indelible mark.
I had met, she worked for
ISI.
ISI. And yeah.
Intercollegiate Studies Institute.
Yes. I had met her, and you know what? I found her one of the nicest people I've ever dealt with professionally. She was really nice and competent. So when I saw that, you know, they kind of did a number on her when she made that commercial. She said, "I'm not a witch." Remember that?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I know some ISI people that worked with her, and she is, anyway. She can't relitigate that.
But
I think that's, those things probably play in McConnell's mind. But you're right, Victor. You know, he kind of bought into the Democrats were pouring money into some of these races to help elect the, you know, in the primary, elect the bad, the Republican who's going to lose.
And no, I mean, he was talking about Blake Masters and J.D. Vance and Herschel Walker. And Herschel Walker's going to win, and Oz is going to win, and J.D. Vance is going to win.
Yeah.
And I think Masters is going to win.
Bolduc is going to win.
I think Bolduc's going to win. And those were all MAGA candidates. And they were not well-funded. And he should have looked at that empirically rather than think about Trump and just say, you know what, I don't care whether they're for Trump or not. They're good candidates.
Yeah.
And Bolduc's got a great personal story, patriotic combat veteran, amazing guy.
Done a terrific job campaigning too. I mean,
yeah, Smiley is just all American person. Her husband is a combat veteran, was wounded and blinded. That woman I was thinking of, I think her name was Drazan. She's wonderful. Tudor Dixon, one of them or two of them have cancer survivors. They're just inspirational people, and they're what you want to represent the Republican Party in this new era. And yet McConnell can't see that. He wants to know, let me just project a minute. I think what he's doing is he's thinking, I've got $25-30 million or more, and I've got to allot it. And if I allot to these candidates and they, if I don't allot, maybe they'll lose. But I don't want them necessarily to lose. But if they win, they may be a Trump anti-McConnell block, and I might not be Senate Majority Leader. So I've got to be very careful how I dole out this money. So I'm going to dole out people that I'm going to get on the phone to and say, look, I'll give you, and down that he held on, he kind of hoarded it to the end. And I think he's probably saying, look, I'll give you $4 or $5 million and that can make the difference. But I don't want you coming in the Senate and voting me out of office. And so that's, or maybe he's saying, I can't ask you to do that. I just want from you that you'll be noncommittal. And so I think that's what's going on.
Well, that could very well be true. I think there's also a very plausible case to be made. And again, we're talking before the elections have happened, and we're speculating. His money was for real, was put in, and could say, you know, this helped make the difference. And if many of these races are relatively close, although once upon a time quite distant. So if you win by 1% or 2%, it's a win nevertheless. But he could make the claim that's, you know, the money I brought to the table.
What Trump needs to do is just say, look, there's a guy in the Senate that's not going to leave, and he's a master of the rules. And on 90% of the legislation, he's going to push the conservative message. He has to, or he won't retain that office. And I'm going to keep out of it. And to the degree I have to deal with them, I'm not going to get into personalities. That's a lot. But.
All right. I do wish Trump put up, if it's true, the amount of money he's holding on to, it would have been pretty righteous.
I think he's looking at DeSantis and think DeSantis got $200 million. So why should I take my money when that guy's going to have more than I am and help my party when that guy is not the official or the titular or unofficial head? So he's not under any obligation to give money to candidates. So no. He's hoarding his money and he's way ahead in his race. And he doesn't acknowledge that I created him when he beat Gillum by a half a point. That's the Trump point. And DeSantis' answer is, look, I won and I have a perfect right. I'm trying to make a model state. You're a resident of my state. It's a good, I'm doing things well. And I've been very loyal to you, but I don't think loyalty demands that I not, you know, that I don't run against you.
Right.
So there's going to be enormous pressure from the Trump people to wait your turn, maybe a Reagan, George Bush Sr. 12-year regnum, or 4 for Trump and 8 for him, I think they're saying, or Ron and Don or whatever that is, combined ticket if Trump changes his residency or something.
Yeah.
But we'll talk about that later. But
yeah, another time, yeah.
There's a rendezvous with a mess coming up.
Oh, yeah, big time. Steel cage match. You think about it, you go back that Florida gubernatorial election 4 years ago. My God, if it had gone the other way, how the dynamics of this country might be different, and that frickin' weirdo would have been a governor of a state that big is
what do you call him a weirdo? He just happened to go to a room. He was just talking to some old friends, and one
with
thing
his pants off.
Another, he got his pants off. He was just a little hot, and then they pushed some drugs on him, and then somebody just, he didn't know the guy was a call boy and had, you know, that there were these cardiac problems. And
yeah,
gosh.
Well, okay, Victor. Well, that's enough for politics. Another, you know, big issue out there is Brazil and Brazil's elections and what it means. What the hell's going on in South America? We'll address that right after these important messages.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first 3 orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
We're back with the Victor Davis Hanson Show. Again, we are recording on Saturday, November 5th, before the elections, obviously. Victor, we're going to talk about a few pieces that Victor writes exclusively for his website, victorhanson.com. You cannot read them unless you subscribe. Why you're not subscribing yet is beyond me, because he writes a ton of stuff. You're a Victor fan. It's not only what you listen to Victor say, it's you read what he writes. It's brilliance. So do yourself a favor and spend the $5 to first test out victorhanson.com. You're going to love it. And then subscribe for the whole year. Discounted rate. It's $50 for the year. And, you know, I know Christmas is coming up. Get it as a gift for somebody, too. Somebody who loves Victor. You hear people all the time, I love that guy. To me, they call, do you know that guy? I'm like, yeah, I do a podcast with him twice a week. Like, you're kidding me. They get their eye teeth to do this. Well, somebody might have an eye tooth. But anyway, I think this is a great idea, gift idea to victorhanson.com. As for me, Jack Fowler, civilthoughts.com. Go there, sign up. Free, no risk. We're not going to sell your name. What is it? What are you getting? You're getting a free weekly email newsletter that I write. It's for the Center for Civil Society at American Philanthropic. We are desperately concerned with strengthening American civil society. And my newsletter has a 12, 13, 14 recommended readings. Hey, here's a great piece I read earlier this week. Here's the link. Here's an excerpt. I think you're smart. I think you would want to read it too. That's all it is. Civilthoughts.com. Sign up today. So, Victor, kind of drowning these last 2 weeks. You turn on, you know, various news programs, and it's so much election news, American election news, but Brazil had an election, and the left has prevailed. And watching the news, it's funny, I was watching, I had Fox on the other night, and after Biden gave his atrocious union station speech in Washington, and Tucker's show comes on at 8 o'clock Eastern time. And I'm thinking, well, Tucker's going to be, you know, drilling this guy a new one. And no, what he talked about was Brazil and how the things we take for granted in America, well, not everyone's taking them for granted anymore. Free speech, opposition, how there's really quite the chill of rights going on in Brazil right now because of this election. And then he also said something that I found deeply troubling, and that this entree to the left in one of the world's biggest countries is really a boon to communist China. So, Victor, I'd like to know if you would share your thoughts about the elections in Brazil. What do you think it means? But as we mentioned a little earlier before the show, you told me, you know, the whole political and ideological disposition of South America is something that should be troubling America, North America, the United States of America. Victor, have at it, please.
Yeah, I think the election in Brazil is part of it, as you mentioned. It's a trend. It's the Venezuela and Nicaragua model, and it's in Peru, and it now it's with, you know, Lula da Silva in Brazil, and Bolsonaro it was a tight election. And when you mean China, what does it mean? It means these left wing governments are more apt to welcome a Chinese capital investment for this Belt and Road, you know, harbor construction and train terminals and cargo ships and all that stuff, and have a forge a new relationship. And of course, it's creeping northward, so it'll be in the Caribbean. And so you'll have it in the Chinese way of thinking. Remember what their ultimate objective is. It is to tell us, you are an ally of South Korea, Taiwan, and Japan, and your ships routinely go into the South China Sea, and that's our sphere of influence. And because we don't have the power to keep you out, we're going to develop host countries in Central and South America, and then we're going to have access to your Caribbean, and we're going to be right in your face. and see if you like that. And so that's the ultimate. As far as and then these governments are, you know, it's because of the COVID lockdown. Take away the lockdown, and many of these right-wing governments were doing pretty well. But if you have stagnant economies, if you have worldwide inflation, if you have a high energy crisis, and you make the call in South American terms, much different than North American terms, that, well, not much different than Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden now, but you say these people, these oil companies or these corporations are stealing from you, and you've got to take back stuff from them, then we know what's going to happen. And Lulu is a convicted felon. And so you're going to have, on the one hand, the Chinese, and then you're going to have this sort of socialist kleptocracy, which you always see in South America. And you can see the United States, I think a lot of social media, didn't they ban people from objecting to the dubious, there were elements about the Brazilian elections, right, that were just, and they were interfering and say, you can't post these things on our social media.
And there was some inference that the Americans diplomatic corps was also involved.
They had warned Bolsonaro that he couldn't object or there would be repercussions. And it's the same thing they did under Clinton and Obama with Netanyahu. They interfered in Israeli elections, and they sent campaign advisors and staffers to work with Netanyahu's opponents. And I think he had 5 elections that we interfered. It's very ironic because we're always telling the world that this entity and that entity is interfering with our elections. But every time you have a left-wing American government, they start to interfere in South American or Israeli elections on behalf of socialists. So right. It's really ironic because in the 60s and 70s, the left said, wow, the right has an idea. Well, at least these sons of bitches that are running South America are our sons of bitches. Mm-hmm. And they were really against, you know, AT&T and Anaconda Copper and United Fruit and these puppet dictatorships. Okay. But in a way, they're doing the same thing now. They're interfering in these left-wing political atmospheres to get the socialists elected, or to use big tech to censor objections about election irregularities. And so it's just, it's part of a larger pattern, Jack. And so if you ask a leftist and they're honest to you, they'll say, but Bolsonaro represents an existential threat, or Bibi Netanyahu is an existential threat, so it requires extra measures to help the people and to preserve equity. So, of course, we have to intervene. But when you guys intervene, it's for selfishness and for a small clique and for a Caudillo. So we're different. And that's how they always think, that the rules don't apply themselves because of their moral superiority.
Hey, Victor, you mentioned, and I should have remembered before the show began, but not only a Brazilian election of importance happened. So did, as you just brought up, so did an Israeli election, and yeah, Netanyahu won. Again, it almost got, like a lot of things, getting lost in the overwhelming pre-election United States election news. Significant win. Two things. I know I'm improvising here. Do you have any thoughts about that?
And well, I mean,
let me ask one of the, I totally yeah. forgotten. You were in Israel with your tour earlier this year. Did you meet with Netanyahu?
Yeah, I mean, he was very accommodating. I took 106 people. I think it was 8 days after I got COVID, and so I had tested negative, but I can't remember a lot of it. I was just white with long COVID. I was just wiped out. But the point I'm making is we got over there and we had arranged, we stayed in the King David for five nights. We had really, it was a wonderful tour. Went all over the country, and Bibi Netanyahu gave a private off the record lecture to our group at the King David. As did Ido Netanyahu, his younger brother, who's a doctor, a very accomplished doctor and playwright. And not only gave that lecture, but mingled with the crowd and talked to them, as Ido did as well. And Ido had dinner with his wife and our group. And then my wife and I went out and had dinner with Ito and his wife, and I had a long talk. I had a private talk with, I can't talk about it, it was on the record with Bibi, but it's very clear when you read the Israeli news accounts. And I spoke to some Israeli groups in Jerusalem, but there was a concentrated effort to weaponize the Israeli criminal justice system and the judiciary to go after Netanyahu, because there was no other way they could stop him, because he had a lot of popular appeal. And people in Israel, when you talk to them, felt that if Netanyahu was their leader, then he and he alone could deal with Iran if that came to it in an existential fashion. He and he alone could have fides or respect among the Gulf states and the Arabs. He could further the Abrams Accord and create this de facto alliance with Arab countries that had the common enemy of Iran.
Right.
And as I think he wrote in his memoir, he gave an interview, Russian pilots in Syria control the airspace from Syria. Hezbollah launches missiles and terrorist attacks into Israel. Israel Air Force responds, and that means de facto in the air, then Israeli pilot waves to a Russian pilot who escorts him as he attacks Hezbollah. And so when Mr. Zelensky starts to shame Israel and says, you've got to be aligned with the United States and do what the United States tells you, and you do this on Ukraine, which they have been doing, then they're getting in trouble for their own national security interests. So when Netanyahu comes back, he will probably, not that he supports Putin, not that he right. wants, but he will be in a realistic fashion say, listen, we will not attack you in Syria, you don't attack us. These we will only preempt or reply to direct aggression against us, and we're not going to be an active player in Ukraine. That's just a fact of life. And so I think it's very funny, even though Netanyahu is a very learned, sophisticated college, multiple graduate degrees, and Trump, who also has an MBA, but Trump is not the same type of leader. They have a lot in common. And I think if you were to ask Netanyahu, and I'm putting words in his mouth, he would probably say something to the effect that while there were more sophisticated American diplomats, and right. I want to make clear, I'm not quoting him. I'm just
right.
suggesting from the Israeli press and talking to observers like Carolyn Glick and others, I think the assessment of Trump is, it's kind of a bewilderment. They're thinking, well, on the one hand, all of the intricacies in the long history of the Jewish state and these power relationships with Abbas and Hezbollah and territorial disputes, the American diplomatic corps mastered all the details, but they never understood the essence of it. That these right. people want to destroy us.
Right.
And Trump comes along from the private sector and has none of that breadth of knowledge and no historical specificity. So, but yet, for some reason, if it's a matter of the Golan Heights or moving the embassy or cutting off the radical Palestinian terrorists from American money cycled through the UN, he got it right.
Yeah.
And so I think there's an enormous amount of respect for Trump,
yeah,
even though people realize that he's a different type of American leader.
I think that plays into what was already a pretty extensive hatred of Trump, that Trump did get these foreign policy things right, while all the Council of Foreign Relations experts and Foreign Affairs magazine writers never got it right.
Well, I mean, look at Israel right now. There's nobody talking about giving back the Golan Heights. You go up there, it's beautiful. It's strategically essential for Israel's survival. And it's not going to go back to, and so they can have another occasion to attack Israel from it. It's not going to happen. Trump right. did that. Yeah. And anybody who goes to Israel and they see, you know, the difference between Tel Aviv and Jerusalem and the residents of historical Jerusalem understands that that's going to be the capital of Israel. And that's not going to change. And anybody who looks at the wider contours of the Middle East sees that the Obama-Biden vision of the Middle East is absolutely bankrupt and stupid, nihilistic. The idea that you deprecate and lessen the influence of Israel and Saudi Arabia and the other Gulf states and maybe Egypt and Jordan, and then you're trying to balance them off by Iran, and then you get a strategic tension, and no one country feels that they have the nod of the United States, and that tension then creates sort of a peace that's insane. And so what Trump basically blew all that up, he got out of the Iran deal and he went to the Saudis and the Jordanians and the Egyptians and the North Africans. And he said, look, Iran wants to destroy you people, these Shia theocratic Persians and your Sunni Arabs, and you have an ally with Israel. You may not like Israel. They may not like you. They may or may like you. I don't know. But you have a common enemy, and you can work and coordinate defense strategies because Israel is never going to preempt and attack you. They're not going to do it. They're not going to use their nuclear force to frap, so to speak, to preempt you. These guys are. In fact, Israel has a strategic wherewithal to be a protectorate in the region. And that's what Bibi was doing. And he had a nod, you know, the Abrams Accord and Jared Kushner and all that. So he had a nod from Trump on that. And it was working. And the left got very angry about it. And as soon as Biden came in, he blew it up. He didn't want it anymore.
Yeah.
And so I think it's a great news that Bibi's been elected. And I think the left will go crazy because the Israeli left is just as crazy as our left.
Right.
And they will find some twist in the law or some informant that worked for Netanyahu 20 years ago, or they'll have some tax accountant that'll go back through years of records, and then all of a sudden they'll spring and say he's committed a felony, and
right,
they'll try to use the judiciary to do what they can't do legislatively.
Right. Criminality.
Exactly.
Criminalize our enemies is one of the main attributes.
And they will do it. They will do it with the help of the whole U.S. establishment, especially Joe Biden, the Obamas, our Secretary of State, Jake Sullivan, National Security Advisor, yeah. Blinken, they'll all join in and try to weaken or undermine the Netanyahu government.
They might detest him too at a personal psychological level, because he is a man's man. Yeah, he's a warrior, an actual warrior.
Well, he was part of a group that saved a whole plane from, and his brother was killed doing the same thing.
Right.
And he's a war veteran.
In Uganda, right.
Three of them, the three brothers were all war veterans.
Yeah.
One of them was a hero. I mean, he died leading the Entebbe raid.
Right, Entebbe, right.
Yeah, and so Yoni. So Yoni was
the only one
he was the only one who was killed. And then even that, the left stooped so low to try to disparage his heroism to hurt Bibi. So they've gone after the entire family in Israel, and they do it on the prompt of the United States.
Right.
Because, you know, remember with Barack Obama, that remark that he's chicken shit, or how dare he speak to the Congress about the Iran deal?
Right.
They kept him waiting so he, you know, so he could cool his heels before he went in the water. They were just petty. And the thing is, it's different, though. The American left is kind of in a mindset of the 1970s where Israel's a dependency. But if you would just look at it empirically, Israel's got enormous amounts of natural gas, even though we've kind of screwed them over on the offshore divisions where we weighed in favor of the Lebanese and the Syrians, so to speak. That was a really terrible thing we did. But nevertheless, they have a good partnership with the Greeks and the Cypriots to bring in on the East Med pipeline, something around 10 billion cubic feet of natural gas right into Italy. We stopped that, of course, I think partly to punish the Israelis. But they have energy, which they never had before. If you go there, they've been just absolutely the most innovative country in the world on desalinization. And they give water to people in the West Bank and the Arab world that wouldn't have it otherwise. the economy. I think people forget the best thing Bibi ever did was to open the economy way back under Sharon when he was an economics minister. And so the last time I had been in Israel, I've been there twice, but the last time I was there, I think it was in 2006 or 7, 8. And when you look at that economy now, it's just, there's cranes dotting the entire skyline everywhere. And the roads are just stuffed with trucks and cars. And Haifa is just, oh my gosh, it's Haifa and Tel Aviv are just booming.
Yeah.
And I've never seen young people, and you don't see people 10, 12, 11 walking out in Jerusalem at 11 at night. Or you don't see people singing Israeli songs on a national holiday or waving Israeli flags. I'm talking about 6 and 7 and 8.
Right.
I've never seen a more enthusiastic, patriotic, confident people. And the economy has just been radically transformed.
Right.
In terms of tech and high tech weaponry. And so it's a very powerful country now in a way that, and it's no longer just a dependency as far as a strategic protection on the United States. It wants to be a full partner.
Ron Dermer, who was the ambassador. I don't know if you ever met him.
Go ahead. He was very good.
He gave a terrific talk at Gatestone Institute a few years ago, and it's very simple. He called Israel is America's indispensable ally. To the point you're just making, Victor. It's not a basket case for America to have to handle. No, it's its own power, and this is any nation that punches above its weight. It's Israel. You know, the Vatican used to.
It does.
Not anymore, but Israel does.
It is. Even when Michael Oren was the ambassador, they went after him. People did. He couldn't speak at an American university without being attacked. He was a wonderful ambassador, historian, veteran. And so I think people in the Middle East, its neighbors now have a different view of Israel. I think they feel that the United States, when you have a left-wing government, is not reliable and would be willing to mortgage their security, however you define that, either by vulnerability to Iran or by making them pump a lot of oil that's not in their interest when the price is very high, to lower the price so that we don't pump oil that we have in greater abundance than they do. It's kind of crazy. And so but they look at Israel, and that kind of helps them with Israel. I think, wow, you guys, you're Western like the United States, but you don't tell us what to do. And you're very powerful in this neighborhood, and you understand what Iran is going to do. And the United States doesn't understand that, but you do. And so they forged a really, I think, a very successful alliance that offers some deterrence against Iran. And if this administration keeps pushing it and pushing it and pushing it, pushing the Iran deal, pushing the Iran deal, pushing the Iran deal, deprecating, criticizing Israel, they're going to send a message to the radical Hezbollah people, to Al-Qaeda, to the Palestinian radicals. They're going to say, it's okay for you to do stuff because Israel sort of deserves it.
And look at China would say that to South Korea, other nations, like, are they going to be there when you need, or Taiwan or Japan, like how they treated Israel. Well, Victor, we have some other things to talk about, including some exclusive material you've written for your website and the most recent piece you've written on We Were Lab Rats. And let's talk about those right after these important messages.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
We're back with the Victor Davis Hanson Show. So, Victor, this is a piece you wrote for American Greatness as your syndicated column, so it's not exclusive. And just like, know if you could talk about this a little bit. My thoughts as you were talking earlier about, we're talking about people with expertise. Well, actually, I said, you know, council foreign relations type. And I don't, you know, expertise sometimes comes with cruelty. And if I go back to a movie, this may not be the most apt comparison, but, you know, Ronald Reagan, King's Row, Where's the Rest of Me, the twisted doctor that cut his legs off because he didn't like him. I do think in the world of you're not talking about mad necessarily scientists here in this piece. The left were the mad scientists. We were their lab rats. But I do think they're the left with their pedigrees and their, you know, Harvard degrees of some accreditation, etc., that comes with it a cruelty in their view towards the not credentialed. And one last babble before I shut up and you speak. You know, quite some time ago, we talked about this Fauci thing. Remember that came out that he permitted this savage testing of dogs, of beagles, and how they were tortured with bugs and all this kind of insanity that would make God cry. And I thought, what possesses, because they can. They do it because they can do it. Like, I'm glad they test animals so we can find cures for our diseases, etc., but not cruel means. Anyway, there's a cruelty. There's a cruelty here. And the left, we were the lab rats that were treated cruelly over the last few years, Victor. So this is a piece you've written. Would you talk about it a little bit? And then we're going to get into some of the ultra stuff you've written for your work.
Yeah, I don't want to get into the election. It's just too complex. Let's just take it for a given that Joe Biden won the popular vote. Let's not get into how he did or anything. But the result is a lot of people who should have known better, independents, some Romney Republicans, voted for Joe Biden on the lie that he was a uniter. He never had been, that he would bring the country together, that he hadn't really campaigned, but he was sort of kind of maybe just let the Trump successful agenda run on autopilot and then add some ruffles and flourishes for the left. And then that unholy Faustian bargain where the left said to him, you know what? We don't have an emissary that can hide our communist agenda. We don't. And we can't carry it across because everybody does not like Elizabeth Warren. They do not like Bernie Sanders and the general population. They will not vote for an idiot like Kamala Harris or Cory Booker or Beto. You're the guy. So you get in the basement, farm out the campaign to the media, attack everybody, and we'll get you across. We'll get all the protests modulated, as Molly Brown wrote about. We'll quiet it down. We'll get everybody out to vote. We're going to change the voting laws. We'll get you in. But once you get in, you're old Joe from Scranton. And you just kind of, oh, and then we'll push this stealthy thing through. And it didn't happen that way. He thought, I'm Joe Biden. This is what I've always wanted to do. And I'm a leftist now, but I'm going to go out and be point man in a way that Barack Obama never could do it. I'm going to outshine everybody. And then to listen to Joe Biden is not to like him. And in his senility and his dotage, he just went out there. And the messenger is nullifying the message. The message was toxic or noxious, and the messenger was obnoxious. And it was a 1-2 punch. And so he's destroyed all of this stuff. And everybody knows that. Everybody understands that, what he did. And so we were lab rats, is what I'm trying to say. That we went along, I'm not talking about our conservative base, but the American people went along and they were going to be tested. So these guys, these mad scientists, got in under dubious circumstances and they said, you know what?
let's get our white coats on and our syringes and let's just go full blast. Border? Let's not open it. Let's just destroy the damn thing. Criminal justice system? Just let them out and see what happens. Energy? Shut Anwar down. Shut all the leases down. Harangue institutions. ESG, don't fund this stuff. Cancel these pipelines. Foreign policy, just give everything to the Taliban and get out of there. And that's what they did. And that was the great experiment. And it destroyed everything. And the country is unrecognizable. If you go to San Francisco or downtown LA or into New York subway, it's unrecognizable from 2 years ago. Or just go, I went to the local Home Depot, tried to yesterday, and they have a policy, Jack, that at given times, they will not have the automatic, you know, the computer where you scan yourself. Right. Those,
yeah, they're just shut out.
Yeah, right. They're just shut down, as is the garden section. There's you tell me. So I was talking to a person off the record, and that is to not be predictably open when the shoplifters, because they're everybody's a shoplifter now, and there's no crime. I see the local police out there every other time I go there. They get called. So the one way they're trying to stop shoplifting is just stopping the automatic or easy entrance and exit, almost right, channeling the crowd through a checkout stand. So then I went to my local Rite Aid. It was down too for maintenance, just shut down. And I think they're implementing new security refits and maintenance. So the country, I went to another drugstore and I just realized for the first time in my little community, drugstores are kind of like what they were in Europe when I was there in the early 70s, where you weren't allowed, you know, you went to these little stores and you said, hey, I need this aspirin there.
Right.
And a little guy with a blue little, you know, a little mock, overalls, and he had a little ladder and he said, okay, I'll get this. And then you waited in line and then he gave you the stuff.
Right.
And that's what it is, because I want to get razors. Nope, can't get razors. They're locked up. Yeah. I thought, well, maybe I have to go on a long trip next week. I need some Zyrtec. Nope, you can't get Zyrtec. It's locked up. I thought, okay, maybe some shampoo. Nope, it's locked up. Everything was locked up. And that's new. And so what I'm getting at, we lab rats were the victims of these experiments in criminal justice and border security and energy sufficiency and inflation with modern monetary theory, print more money, the wealthier we all become, and sort of, I don't know what we call nihilist foreign policy, and we blew up the country. But I said there was only one good thing about it. Rarely does out-and-out socialists come to power. It hasn't happened since FDR in 32. And rarely, when they do come to power, do they have both houses of Congress. And rarely, when they have both houses of Congress and their president, are they stupid enough to go full bore immediately and expose who they are. And they did all of that. And now people can say, Joe Biden is a fraud. He's a mean-spirited SOB. He divided the country.
Right.
The squad is insane. Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren don't know the first thing about economics. We destroyed a wonderful energy policy. We humiliated ourselves in Afghanistan, which helped prompt Vladimir Putin to take a stupid step into Ukraine. And we really offended the Canadians by canceling Keystone and hurt ourselves in the process. And we've unleashed this George Soros, this mad cap. I don't know what he is. He's some kind of mad scientist that thinks he can destroy criminal justice by getting these nihilists elected in big cities.
Sick.
And people are dying on the streets. Yeah. And
the border.
Yeah, you know, and as I was driving through L.A., I said to myself, it won't change until the language changes.
Mm-hmm.
And the moment people say, I'm not going to use the word homeless anymore, I'm going to use the word vagrant, because not all of those people are homeless. A lot of them are drug addicted. Some of them are criminals. Some of them are assaulters. But some of them just don't want to live in a house. Some of them are tragic people who were, you know, can't afford the cost of housing, but they're not just homeless. And that's a euphemism for a lot of damage, health that goes on. When you see people fornicating, urinating, defecating on the streets, that's not a modern civilized society. And yeah, it's not going to change until we change the word diversity. Diversity doesn't mean diversity. It does not want, it wants uniformity. It wants one socialist voice with people that are mostly as few non-white people as possible voicing that one voice. It does not want people, as it used to, proportionally represented by their, if you're going to think that way, but with different political opinion. Stanford University, Harvard University does not want 40% of the student body liberal, 40% conservative, 20% you know, disputed, and then right, people roughly looking like the population. And they don't. They're into repertory admissions. They've gone beyond proportional representation, which I wasn't a supporter. I was a supporter of meritocracy, but I understood the logic. But now they're in repertory. And so when we get rid of that word diversity, because it doesn't mean they want diversity of anything except a monolithic megaphone on the left. That's all they want. We got to get rid of that word as well. We got to get rid of the word affirmative action. It's not affirming anything. It's a regressive action. They should call it regressive action.
Well, it's pretty good for white. It's benefited white women pretty much.
It's benefited white women, but it's punitive. And what's happened under this, because I go to a lot of campuses, I would say the following, just looking as a stranger walking across a California campus, especially a Tony campus like Berkeley or Stanford, USC, there are really, I could say this, I think with some confidence, there's almost no working white kids, none, males.
Right.
Because what's happened is they've taken the proportional representation, 12% African-American, 10% Latino, 1 or 2% Native American, 55% women, and that left you with 68% whites, but maybe only 28% or 30% white males. So if you want to up the African American quota from 11 or 12 to 15 or 16, the Latino from 10 or 11 to 14 or 15, and you are going to cut back on whom? Well, you cut back on the Asians, you're under federal scrutiny. So they're going to leave that alone. So what they've done is they've cut back on white males, probably from about 35 to 36% of the student body that represented their actual numbers in the general population down to about 20. But then it gets interesting because who are the 20 they're selecting? That is not enough quota to handle sports, legacies, and donors.
Right.
So when you look at the white males that are on campus at Harvard or Yale, they're more than not likely to be the sons of people who have five or six generations going to Harvard or Princeton or Stanford. Their parents gave $10 or $12 million.
Right.
That has absolutely eliminated a guy from, let's say, Tulare, California, whose dream was going to Stanford and got straight A's, took all AP classes, got 4 or 5, aced the ACT and SAT, and then wrote an essay, you know, about getting up in the morning and working out on his on a tractor or something to give true diversity. That person has zero chance to get in.
Zero. Yeah.
And that's what's happened all across the country. So I get this, all these people, for some reason, I don't know, I get maybe one or two a week, just out of the blue, people email and said, you know, my son really wants to go to Stanford University. Could you advise him? Could you meet with him? What can you do? I always say the same thing. I bet your son is a straight A student. I bet your son has perfect scores. I bet your son's an Eagle Scout. It's not going to work.
Right.
If he is a white male, and he has a perfect record, He is going to compete against the Silicon Valley hierarchy that have an unlimited amount of money that will give it to Stanford, or they have people, they're all themselves Stanford graduates, so they know everybody. And it's very funny because these institutions pass themselves off as egalitarian institutions, and they're not.
My wife, Sharon, said the only way my kids would have gotten, my middle kid, Andy's a man now, captain, you know, cross country team, valedictorian, captain of basketball, altar boy, you name it, you know.
Where is he now? Kid,
well, he graduated. We went to UConn, but no way. He won the Yale Book Award. He didn't get in. And then Sharon said, what he should have done was written in his essay how much he despised the political views of his father, who was the publisher of National Review. That might have done the trick. Or so, hey, Victor, yeah. We're running out of time, but I promised we're going to get a little preview of something you've written for the website. So, you've written this three-part series on how the projectionist game is played, and it's pretty extensive. Would you just briefly tell us, could you summarize it? What prompted you to write it? And I just before you do that, I want to again tell our listeners, I mean, this is ultra content. This is the kind of material that Victor writes exclusively for victorhanson.com.
Well, if you take some of the most controversial issues that the left uses to attack its opponent, take the 25th Amendment. If you said, and people have said that Joe Biden is non compos mentis. He's not in control of his mind. And this is a classic 25th Amendment question. Because just as we've been talking this week, Jack, he said there were 54 states. He didn't know whether he was in the 20th, 21st, or 22nd century. He talks about that he went, implying that he went to a black college, which was a complete lie. He doesn't know where he is. And so you think, well,
his son died in Iraq again. Remember?
Yes, his son died in Iraq, and he mislabeled the Ukrainian war the Iraq war. So you look at that, and it's a disaster. Okay, so you say 25th Amendment. Well, they were the ones that brought up the 25th Amendment. They were the ones that said that Bandy Lee, the Yale psychiatrist, should talk to members of Congress to assess Donald Trump. They were gaga because Andrew McCabe and Rod Rosenstein were going to wear a wire and trap Trump and then go to the cabinet and say the guy's crazy. They wrote things all the time. There were people anonymous, all these op-eds that he's not saying he's dangerous. He's going to blow us up. But that was a projection. And so now, 25th Amendment, you don't dare do it. They do it. And they accuse everybody of not being able or up to office, but you can't say it about them because they're projecting. Same thing about insurrection, armed insurrection. Does anybody remember Washington and the Chaz Free Zone where those radicals connected to BLM just walked around with loaded AR-15s and took over the municipal space?
And raped and murdered inside the perimeter?
Yes, the 120 days... 2 billion, same old, 35, 40 people killed, shot, 1,500 police officers. Liz Cheney won't mention a word of that.
Gosh.
But it wasn't, so they project that onto the armed insurrection, but there may have been people in the larger crowd that had a weapon or in a car, but there were no people inside the Capitol that I'm aware of that were arrested or detained that had a weapon. I.e. a firearm that was loaded. It just didn't happen. But that was a projection. You look at election denialism. Stacey Abrams, Jimmy Carter, we talked about that earlier in the broadcast. Hillary Clinton, all they do is talk about denialism. They get so into denialism, so then they say, you're a denialist because they're a denialist. Same thing with collusion. Collusion, 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 collusion. Donald Trump colluded with the Russians. Donald Trump. You can see those clips. There's a clip on the internet. I think it's 12 of all the time they accused that. It was everybody. It was Max Boot. It was Jory Reid. It was all of the CNN. It was everybody. It was Dianne Feinstein was saying it. You know, that The election's not legitimate. They colluded with the Russians. And then what was that but projection? Who colluded with the Russians? Who hired a foreign national to gather Russian-fed dirt that was made up to their receptacles, Dyshenko and Dolan, over there in Moscow? So Russia probably just made up all these crazy things and said, these guys hate Trump so much, this will be interesting. And they were shocked that that all that crap that they threw out there was gobbled up and then vomited back into the Steele dossier. So whatever they are guilty of, you can tell because they accuse somebody of doing what they have done in the past, is what I'm trying to say, whether it's denialism, election denialism, or whether it's changing votes or tampering with the voting process by making sure that you have 102 million mail-in or early ballots and the rejection rate just falls by a magnitude of 10, and then you accuse other people of trying to have voter suppression, or on and on and on. And so when I think the bottom line is, when you hear these radical leftists and these Democrats start screaming and yelling at the top of their voice about some alleged felony that somebody's committed, then you understand where it's coming from. It's just a projectionist that they're guilty of.
It is the standard operating procedure of the left. I think it's...
I think it is. So go after Donald Trump for his tax records, and you can assume that Hunter and Joe and the brother didn't pay taxes, fully right. pay taxes on all that money that they
received.
Or impeach Donald Trump for a phone call on the allegations that he was trying to gain political traction for himself by delaying aid to Ukraine, and that impaired national security. And just assume that that's exactly what Hillary Clinton did when she sent Bill over to get $500,000, and I think it was $3 million to her foundation, and more money to PACs so that she could oversee the sale of Uranium One to Russian-connected interest as preparation for her presidential one, or most importantly, what Joe Biden is doing right now by essentially going to the Saudis and threatening them and threatening our relationship with them unless they agreed to pump an extra 2 million barrels before the election, or trying to take 40% out of the strategic petroleum reserve designed for natural disaster protection and drain it for his own selfish agenda in the midterms. And yes. So that's how they operate. Everybody should understand that. Anytime they make an accusation, a shrill, angry, loud accusation, you can be sure that they've done that themselves.
Well, Victor, that is all the time we have today, but for the usual at the end of the show, where we are truly grateful to our listeners for listening and communicating with us. Yeah, some do it. I get lots of emails about the show. By the way, I got several about the show recently, where you talked about feminism and your mother, and that really meant a lot to a lot of people. No matter what platform you listen to the podcast on, thanks. It could be Stitcher or Google Play, on iTunes and Apple. You can rate the show from 0 to 5 stars. You know, one or two crazies give it a 0. Practically everyone gives it a 5. It has 4.999 rating. So thanks very much. I think we're doing something right. Well, Victor's doing something right. Some people leave comments. We read them. We read them all. And there are two I'd like to share here at the end of the show, Victor. One is from Cindy's iTunes in Arizona, AZ. BDH is a wealth of knowledge and wisdom. I'm an American history teacher to junior high students in a parochial school, and I first learned about Victor Davis Hanson years ago when he was a guest on the Dennis Prager show. Since that time, BDH has been one of my very favorite people to learn from. I am also appreciative of Victor's ability to connect ancient history with our present time. If I ever had the good fortune to meet Victor, I would thank him for his important contributions to education and for being a wise and humble voice in our country. And that's from Cindy. Cindy, you write me separately. I'll send you Victor's address. You can go knock on the door. And then, we have another one from AltMom95, titled VDH is my favorite. And this is really sweet, I think. My late dad praised his writing. And what a gift that commendation has been to me as I raise and educate my 6 children. He's a great observer of human nature, too. Thank you, VDH, for representing your beautiful and sadly mismanaged state of California so well. Hey, did you see that, by the way, Victor? It's Carrie Lake, like, we can't be like Carrie.
Yes, California. I did.
Yeah. Maybe we'll see.
That was shot at Gavin Newsom.
Yeah, we should talk about that.
We have to talk for 5 or 6 minutes about Gavin Newsom.
Well,
that buffoon.
Yeah,
all the damage he's done. I'm just looking out the window at my street that I have not been able to drive on for 3 years because 4 miles from here it's interrupted by Stonehenge.
Yeah,
and it's shut down. That we spent $15 billion. We haven't laid 1 foot of track. And then yesterday, driving.
Boondoggles interrupt us, I think.
You get on the 99 freeway, the main lateral from Northern California all the way to the Grapevine. And then all of a sudden, you get near Delano. And for the next 30 miles to Visalia, it's back in the 1950s. But the traffic is 2022. And remember, when you've got 40 million people and 27% of them were not born in the United States, and you have a transportation system designed for about 1955, you have all the ingredients for what is now California's transportation nightmare. So everything about it is sad. I was talking to a lot of people at Claremont. That was on everybody's mind at the Claremont Institute last night, night before last in Los Angeles. And it was very sad to hear all of these people in their 60s and 70s who had worked so hard to make this beautiful place in Southern California and just to see it simply destroyed.
And thinking I maybe should follow others and go to Texas or Florida. I mean, why should people leave where they're from? You know, I have a feeling of people being forced to do that.
I got to that point. Why should I leave? I didn't do it. Why don't they change? Why don't people change? And it's very easy. You know, the answer is how to just enforce the laws on the books and cut taxes and cut all these crazy entitlements and fire all these administrators in the public universities and high schools that aren't doing anything. Well, and then clamp down on antitrust laws and the monopolies on Silicon Valley and produce and then invest in infrastructure. Just use the state. Instead of, we used to have 7% Medi-Cal. Now it's about half the budget. And just build
Victor,
dams and aqueducts and freeways.
Hansen for governor. I'm going to make the bumper stickers.
Larry Elder would have been a good governor. He had all the answers. He had good people around him, and what they did to him was criminal. They called him a white supremacist. A leftist dressed up in a monkey uniform.
Yeah.
And it was just
terrible. He's a good man. I really like Larry.
I like him a great deal. I used to, years ago, when I did his radio show, and I always liked him.
Hey, let me recommend then, because we have to, maybe you, Sammy, and you, Victor, when you record, talk about, because Newsom is also, we're recording, I'm sorry, I feel like a broken record, recording before Election Day, but Newsom, most prominent of Democrats in the nation, saying, my God, we suck at messaging, we've blown this. I don't think you say we've blown
that
it.
Opportunistic. I'm going to attack my opponents because I'm the.
I know. Save it for Sammy.
Because he says the same thing that they do.
Well, anyway, Victor.
He's not going to go campaign and said, we gave you a great inflation policy. And that energy thing is a winner. And boy, look at that border.
Gosh, he's. Yes, he's full of it. We'll end it at
okay.
that. So, Victor, you've been terrific. Thanks so much. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Appreciate it. We'll be back again soon with another episode of the Victor Davis Hanson Show. Bye-bye.
Thanks, everybody, for listening.